that eternal home in heaven. This morning I mentioned that we would be talking about, this evening, intelligent design. Before we do that, I'd like us all, if we could, turn in our Bibles to Job chapter 38. Job chapter 38, we're going to read verses 1 through 21. It's a rather lengthy reading, but I think that you can get the idea of the importance of what we are setting out to do and try to teach and point out, that God is not pleased when we speak false things about Him. God is not pleased when people put out false statements about the age of the earth, about how the earth was made, how man is made, how old the earth is. And there's some things that they think just happened. And I mentioned that this morning, but you know, there is a purpose to our design. God wanted children. God created this earth. It's a magnificent machine when you think about it. It is a magnificent machine. Water is distilled, water goes up, rain comes down, it waters the crops. We had a beautiful day today of rain. We needed rain. The area was dry, and it's not a rain that's flooding. It's just smooth and steady. And I bet you could hear the corn growing if you went out in the field. I've heard you can do that. I haven't heard it myself. Heard some creaking and things like that, but it's been dry for a while, and I bet it's quite good for the crops, and what a blessing it is from God. But in Job chapter 38, starting with verse 1, again, Job and his sorry friends, or Job has been listening to his sorry friends' counsel, and they, again, as I mentioned this morning, they have been speaking all the things that God intended and God meant, and nothing really could be further from the truth. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens my counsel? By words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you will answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who?" And all the sons of God shouted for joy. "Or who shut the sea with doors, when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment, and thick darkness its swaddling band? When I fixed my limit for it, and set bars and doors? When I said, 'This is far, this far you may come, but no farther. And here you proud waves must stop. Have you commanded the morning since your days began, and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth, and the wicked be shaken out of it? It takes on form like clay under a seal, and stands out like a garment. From the wicked their light is withheld, and the upraised arm is broken. Have you entered the springs of the sea? Or have you walked in search of the depths? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Or have you, where is the way to the dwelling of light? And darkness, where is its place, that you may take its territory, that you may know the paths to its home? Do you know it, because you were born then, or because of the great number of your day? Because the number of your days is great." Well, what I know from God, we get from the Bible. That's all we can know, is what we get from the Bible. And we can have science, again, as we talked about this morning. Science can prove things that God said in the Bible. Intelligent design versus evolution. Our study uses facts from science, history, prophecy. Very hard against teaching the truth in our schools and generally in public. People lose their jobs because of the things that they believe. They may put out a book. The folks we ate lunch with today, they were talking about seeing that a man had lost his job. He was a head firefighter in a city, and he had lost his job because he published a book, not on the job, not anything to do with his job, but that he had believed in God and believed the Bible. The city got rid of him. These things are happening today. And there's other organizations. This is a mockery that you'll see, intelligent design. You're thinking, what is this? Well, it's a mockery of the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. And basically, they've taken the place of God and put a spaghetti monster. And they think it's funny. They mock God. This appeared, actually, in the Tampa newspaper, December 22nd, 2007, on the front page. Recently, within the last year, and I don't remember the exact day, I was in Tampa, and I saw an article, and they're called the Pastafarians. That's why you had the spaghetti monster taking the place of God. They think it's complete utter foolishness that God created the earth and everything in it. They mock it. They take great joy in that. They're really smart men because and women that are part of this organization. I saw a picture of, and they run for public offices, by the way, but they take their job so seriously that being sworn in to their newly elected post, the man had created a tinfoil hat for himself. I mean, it really looked quite ridiculous. And the point is just to mock all authority and certainly the authority of God. They don't take it seriously. But again, the Pastafarians are part of an informal online networking network that can rain scrutiny on and ridicule on school districts flirting with intelligent design. I think all of us have a vested interest in not seeing science standards lowered. Or in this case, having the definition of science changed to allow supernatural theories, said Bobby Henderson, founder and operator of the Spaghetti Monster website. Website's still active. You can leave here this evening and get online. You can look them up. They're still very active. And their job is to teach, is to mock, put down, ridicule, and try to destroy any efforts to teach the truth to our children or to stand for truth in public. They want no part of it. They'll have no part of it. Intelligent design. And the question is, this is really a definition of it. It says, a theory of biological evolution developed by Charles Darwin and others, stating that all species of organisms arise and develop through the natural selection of small inherited variations that increase the individual's ability to compete, survive, and reproduce. And that was put out by the American Heritage Medical Dictionary. That's the definition of Darwinian evolution. Intelligent design. The theory of intelligent design holds that certain features of the universe and living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, not an undirected process such as natural selection. And that was put out by the Discovery Institute, a conservative think tank. These are the two competing thoughts. And scientists grab hold of these ideas and they don't want to let go of them. Just as we see evolution taught in schools, it's a theory. It's a theory that's been proven false, but yet it's still taught as truth. It's still to be considered. We must look at this. Don't even talk about creation anymore. Some schools may. I think when I was in school, it was presented, this is a theory, and some people believe this. And I had a Church of Christ member who was my biology teacher said, this is what some believe, and some people believe that we were created by God. So, again, these are protected. You know, these people get defensive. You have school boards and things like that. Wow, don't touch that. Don't go there. We're not teaching our children God. No, we can't have any part of that. You're not allowed to question it. Well, there's four natural laws that demand an intelligent design. And we talked about several of those this morning. The law of conservation of mass and energy. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. You can't create matter or destroy matter. It's still here. The law of entropy. Again, that's the wearing down. The universe's energy is wearing down. Running out is like a clock. The law of biogenesis. Life begets life. And the law of heredity. The offspring only have characteristics of the parents. These things are recorded. These are laws that even the most godless person admits, well, yes, they are in place because we've conducted experiments and things, but they prove nothing, they claim. Well, sure they do. They prove an intelligent design. There was a plan. All matter and energy was completed at the universe's origin. We read about that this morning. From beginning to the end, it was complete, created, and in place. Again, thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their hosts, Genesis 2, 1 through 2. The Hebrew word ka taba means everything in them, the heavens and the earth, they were done. Again, we don't see spaceships from planet 15 coming in and dumping off more oxygen or water or going to drop off another load of cows. We're self-sustained. Everything is here that we have. That's what we're ever going to have. And in time, it's going to wear out. The works were finished from the foundation of the world, Hebrews 4:3. Fact, Moses and Paul both affirm absolutely nothing has been added to the universe since it was finished, as we read in Genesis this morning. It was done, complete, done in 6 days. That's just hard to believe, isn't it? Not really. God can do anything. God could have done it in less time. I got news for you, as he spoke it into existence. All matter and energy completed at universe's origin. We've read that. Pre-1841 AD, men conceived the universe as never being a closed and finished system after its origin. Things being created, animals coming up out of nothing, new creatures in the sea being created all by themselves, just happening. In 1841, Mayer's law of conservation and mass of energy affirmed that the sum total of all energy in the universe remains constant. What does that mean to us? Again, that means nothing's added. There's nothing new coming in to create life or create energy and other things. The universe is decaying. Lift up your eyes to the sky, then look at the earth beneath. For the sky will vanish like smoke, and the earth will wear out like a garment. Isaiah 51:6. Thou, Lord, did lay the foundation of the earth and the heavens. They will perish, but thou remainest, and they all will become old as a garment. We're told several times here in God's word, the earth is going to wear out. We read this morning or studied this morning how they know the earth is slowing down. The rotation around the sun is slowing down. The earth's spinning is slowing down. The moon is slowing us down. These are things that are being slowed down. And when these things slow down, they're going to lose their momentum and their effect, and eventually things will just stop. We know in the scriptures the earth is not going to be destroyed by water. We know that. As God did destroy it once, we have the rainbow placed in the sky as that promise. It'll never happen again. But we do know it's going to happen with fire. God will destroy the world with fire. In 1850, the discovery of the law of entropy, a total amount of energy remains, but amount of useful energy always decreases. Now what does that mean? Well, first of all, we put out the statement that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Well, I burn a log. I get the energy out of it. I use it. Well, guess what? The energy's still there. It's been released to the atmosphere, hasn't it? The log has changed state. It's gone from a nice, robust log to a pile of ash. As it's heated, the gases are released from it. It changes state. Changes of state. There's basically the energy changes its form into a different form, and as example goes to the atmosphere. But the energy's still here. We think we can destroy things, but we really can't. God said it long ago, 700 BC, the earth will wear out like a garment. Again, Isaiah 51:6. It's like a time clock or like this sand clock. There's a certain amount of activity that's there, and eventually it will run out. Again, ancient philosophers thought that the order of improvement came about by out of disorder supplied by unlimited energy. In 1850, a model steam engine was used to discover the law of entropy, disproving all past concepts. How could that steam engine do that? Well, think about it. We put coal or wood, we burn it. It gives off heat. The heat is converted to mechanical energy with the steam engine. And where does it go up to? It goes up steam out of the stack. The energy's there, but then it dissipates. It's changed state. It's not usable anymore. So if we cannot either create or destroy energy, but it does change state. What does that tell you? There's a limited number of so much energy on the earth. Eventually, it's going to run out. It's a finite amount of energy on the earth. Scientific fact, our world and everything in it it's becoming disordered. That's what happens. You burn wood, it's disordered. Its usefulness is used for heat, and then it's dust. Then it's dust. It's running out and wearing out like a garment. Just like God said 2,600 years before. We talked about this morning. Life begets life. God created the sea monsters and every living thing that moves. Genesis 1:21. Created. God who lives eternally gives life to all creatures. We don't have new life being created. We don't have different animals coming out of the ocean or just suddenly appearing out of the woods, a new life form. Life produces life. Again, animals produce animals. Cats produce cats. Dogs produce dogs. Horses, horses. And so it is. God created man in his own image and made our male and female. He created them. God is spirit, and the creator and father of man's spirit made in God's own image. Sung in heaven, for thou didst all things, didst create all things, because of thy will they exist and were created. Revelation 4:11. God created it. God created it. Life begets life. Pre-1650 AD, it was theorized that eggs of all lower animals are formed out of rotting substances and persisted for generations as spontaneous generation theory. You can read about it in books. It was taught as fact. They didn't know where life came from. Life produces life. Surely they had horses in the 1600s. Surely they bred horses and had horses and dogs and cats and ducks and chickens and all that. But yet, men thought this up, that new life comes from garbage and just starts on its own. That's the kind of things that we have put out in our society for us to believe. It was put out as fact then. It's ridiculous. In 1650 AD, Francis Reddy disproved spontaneous generation applied to insects. Francis Reddy completed an experiment. He took 8 bowls and he took 8 pieces of meat. And he put 1 piece of meat in each of the 8 bowls. Over 4 of the bowls, he placed cheesecloth. 4 of the bowls, he did not. Now, in a short period of time, the 4 bowls without the cheesecloth, maggots appeared. Now, was that spontaneous life? No. Flies landed on them and laid eggs. The 4 bowls that had the cheesecloth, there was nothing on them. Very simple experiment. Very simple. But he disproved the spontaneous generation. Because the 4 bowls that had the cheesecloth, they had air, it had everything except exposure to whatever's in the room and in the neighborhood and in the air. So that was one test. Well, that wasn't good enough. In 1862, Louis Pasteur, he settled the question of spontaneous generation for the last time. Almost 200 years later, he wondered about this, and he wanted to run his own experiments. And so what he did was he obtained a series of glass flasks. And these glass flasks were made in a gooseneck shape. He put in a broth inside. He had a series of flasks so he could have repeated results. We talked about that this morning. Laboratory repeated results that we can duplicate. It's good science. Again, what they put out as science oftentimes is not, but this is good science. So he put these broths in these flasks, and he let them set for a while. Nothing happened. He let it set a little longer. Nothing happened. So 2 of the flasks he took, and he tipped them up, and he let the broth get into the gooseneck of the flask. And then he tilted it back, and he let it set. In no time, the broth developed mold and all kinds of growth in there. And what did that prove? Well, the 2 flasks that weren't tipped to pick up what had collected in the gooseneck, nothing happened. There was no growth. There was no life. There should have been. It has air. The air can get in through a gooseneck. But no life occurred. And that was the death knell of the spontaneous generation theory. Proven wrong. Life begets life. That's where life comes from. Law of biogenesis. Life begets life stands as an enigma to scientists who want to create life. They don't like the idea of it. That's too bad. Moses and singing angels were right. Science proved it. All animals reproduce after their own kind. God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their own kind. Again, we read that this morning. So I'm trying to go through these quick. Their own kind. You shall bring two of every kind into the ark. Keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Now, this is in Genesis. And as God is getting ready to load the ark that Noah has constructed per God's instructions, you need two, a male and a female. God stated how it's done. And Noah did. And Noah and his family lived. And the animal generations lived. Hebrew, meaning for kind, considered the basic division of animal life relative to term, a genre, family, or order. We know what kind is. Can a dog and a cat reproduce? No. One's a feline, one's a canine. They're not the same kind. They're different. We don't have cat dogs, as I mentioned this morning. We don't have cat dogs. We don't have giraffes with bear bodies, like a bear, a grizzly bear body. We don't have them. We don't have zebra dogs, part dog and part zebra. Well, it's complete ridiculousness, isn't it? We don't have that. This doesn't happen. God set these things in order. It's a law, the law of biogenesis. We have it. Pre-1900, much speculation, including hybridized animals, intermixes of species through mating. Never proven. Mendel's law of heredity, like begets life. That's in 1865. Published as a result of experimentation with bean reproduction. Bean plants. Bean plants make bean plants. And in 1900, the results were published and became accepted scientific to the scientific community. Beans produce beans. Isn't that amazing? Well, anybody that plants a garden can figure that one out. We don't go plant a bunch of watermelon seeds and look for zucchini to come up. It doesn't work that way. And the beans carry many of the traits of the beans that came from. They had, let's say they had blue flowers. The beans would have maybe mixed blue and white. They had the traits of the parents. This is a big one. Earth's magnetic field. The Earth is encompassed with a magnetic field. And again, it's one of those things we just don't think about every day. We don't see it. We don't feel it. You have a compass? You can see the results of it. Why is it we can know which way is north? We know the path of the lines of the magnetic field and the way they go. We can see that. But it does a whole lot more than that. Now, why would there be a magnetic field around the Earth? In the center of the Earth, there's a molten core. As we sit here, stand here, whatever. Below us, in the center of the Earth, is a core that's spinning. We don't think about that, do we? We go to bed at night, we don't even think about it. Below us is a spinning metal core, molten iron. Now, the Earth is electromagnet. We have proof of that through the compasses that we use. There are instruments that can measure this. The Earth produces electricity. We don't really think about that much, do we? How important is this electromagnet in what it does? It's pretty important. Earth's fluid core is in motion, creates magnetic energy. Life is like a clock. Its magnetic spring is running down. U.S. government published it's decaying at a known rate of 5% per 100 years. That's pretty aggressive as far as loss of rotation and speed. and it will vanish in 3991 AD. Sometimes scientists think it'll be longer. I got news for you. It might be 10,000 years from now. God will decide when the inner core will stop spinning. But the bow wave reduces harmful effect from solar radiation and cosmic waves. If we did not have that magnetic field in place, we would not have life here on the Earth because it shields us. What is the sun? The sun is a controlled nuclear reactor placed just far enough away from us that it doesn't burn us up, just far away from us that we have heat to live by, just far enough away that we're not so cold that we freeze to death. It's set there with a purpose, and it was designed. Why doesn't it just flare up and just burn us all up? Because God set limits on it. So if this bow wave is decreasing, which is what is being implied here, and these studies are proving it, we have more radiation coming into the Earth. So eventually, if that core stops spinning, as they theorize 4,000 AD, again, no man knows that. Anybody that propounds to know when the Lord will end the Earth is a fool. Nobody knows that. So what are the chances of that just being placed there by chance? It's completely ridiculous. It's even hard for me to comprehend as we go out and we dig in the garden and the earth is cold or whatever, that far enough down inside the center of the earth is a spinning, molten metal ball producing electricity. Now, where does lightning come from? It's electricity, isn't it? Think about it. So the earth is not only, it produces electricity, it's an electromagnet. It's producing electricity, produces lightning. We'll see why lightning is important to us today. Lightning is very important. Very important. So what can we learn from that? What can we calculate from all of this? Number one, it's wearing out. Number two, it has a specific design. God created this. This magnetic field is so important to our lives as we know it. Without it, again, the radiation on the earth would be overwhelming. I've already got pre-skin cancer up here, and I didn't wear a hat like my mom told me to. It's part of life. But it very well will get worse as this decreases. 5% per 100 years. So the U.S. government did these calculations, and their thought is, well, the Earth is to be too short-lived. So what do we learn about the magnetic field? Again, going back in time, we can talk about the age of the Earth. Going back in time, the magnetic field strength doubles every 1,400 years. So we've lived in a time, not that they could have measured all this, but they've got a good idea where it is. As the field strength increases, the Earth's resistance produces greater heat. I worked as an electrician. I understand Ohm's law. If we have the Earth producing electricity and currents are flowing, I think it's 18,000 amps an hour is discharged from the Earth to the clouds or to the atmosphere. More electricity flowing makes things warmer. Less electricity makes things less. So it's proportional square. So as it used to be warmer, and it's cooling off naturally by the reduction of this magnetic energy and electrical production from the center of the Earth. Based on these figures, Earth's beginning could not go back more than 6,000 to 10,000 years. That's pretty important to know. That's pretty important to know. And at 20,000 years, it would have melted down. The U.S. government promotes Earth as millions of years old. See, they produce information that it could not be more than 6,000 to 10,000 years old by simple calculations that they give us the numbers for, yet they still put out that it's millions of years old. We went to a dinosaur dig, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, down in Glen Rose, Texas. And things didn't go so well with the dig. Not that we had anything to do with that. But bottom line is, we went to the park across the street. There's a federally government-owned dinosaur park. And it's loaded with dinosaur prints. It's pretty neat to see. But I noticed as the sign as you went in, we have preserved these dinosaur tracks for your viewing. They were created millions and millions of years ago. It's a federal government sign. The U.S. government promotes Earth as a million years old. It's not. It's not millions of years old. So, as the field strength increases, the Earth's resistance produces greater heat proportional to square, going back in time again 1,400 years. Based on these theories, the Earth could not go back more than 6,000 to 10,000 years. It would be too hot, and it would blow up. At 20,000 years, the magnetic current would be greater, 50,000 times greater, and 25 million times hotter, proportional square. It can't be. It doesn't work. There is design in this creation, designed to protect us. The atmosphere protects us, the moisture in the atmosphere, all these things. This magnetic field is very important. Again, the U.S. government promotes Earth as millions of years old, and they're wrong. Lightning causes rain, and that's why the lightning is important to us. And the Earth produces this. In Job chapter 38, 25 through 27, who has cleft the channel for the flood or the way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land without people, on a desert without a man in it, to satisfy the waste and desolate land and to make seeds of grass to sprout? Job 38, 25 through 37. God's asking them, who made the path for the thunderbolt? I used to think that lightning came down from the clouds and went down. Well, in 1930, Sir Charles Boys discovered lightning develops only after leaders pass from the clouds to the earth. It's not lightning. Have you ever read any descriptions of somebody being struck by lightning? Not all of this, but I've read that the individuals felt their hair standing up on their arms and maybe the back of their neck and maybe their head. They felt their hair feeling tingling. Those are the leaders that come down from the clouds, a negatively charged ion leader, as it's called. He couldn't see this until in 1930 when he had a camera that could slow it down enough that he could see. The other thing that he also noticed was that the lightning came from the earth and went up. Not typically what we think, but it's very important. In 1960, meteorologists began for the first time to understand the cause and effect of electrical charges on clouds and formation and rain. You see, we really don't have rain without electrical currents. You may not hear them, but they're there. And they've done these studies. 2000 BC, for the lightning to cause it to rain. Job 38, 25 through 27. The lightning to cause it to rain. God said it. Science just discovered this in the last 40, 50 years. After all that time, think about that. God said it when he was scolding Job and his friends. The lightning caused it to rain. Well, there's several things that we know. In 1942, we know that World War II was going on. There were several things, and again, if you glance in the book, if you download the book and take a look at it, one thing it talks about is radar and the importance of radar, all the things it discovered. When they were setting up the radar and testing it, trying to develop it, they had some real problems, and that is they had so much noise in the radar and so much interference and things, they couldn't figure out what it was. Well, in the Bible it talks about the stars singing. And the stars emanated a noise. So that's one thing the radar discovered, but God said it long before that. But something else it noted was in storms, rain, cloud, they could see the lightning occurring. And when that lightning occurs, that's what created rain. In 1965 in a laboratory, they were trying to simulate a rainstorm in a chamber. And they could not get it to do it. It wasn't until somebody took their comb out, one of those plastic combs, I think they used to have a lot more static electricity than they do now, but the guy zipped it around, got it charged up, and he touched it to the glass. He touched it to the glass, and it rained in the chamber. The electricity stimulated the rain, just like God said 4,000 years ago. So God has presented this design to us. We cannot deny these designs if we're Christians. If we want to be of the world and of the world, well, we certainly can deny them. Christian view of truth, again, John 8:32, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. 1 Timothy 6:20, O Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to you, avoiding worldly and empty chatter and the opposing arguments of what is false called science. False called science. 1 Timothy 6:20, which some have professed and thus gone astray from the faith. They face the same challenges we do. They had great scientists and great philosophers propounding truth and knowing all things, just like Job's friends did, putting it out as fact. And it wasn't. No intelligent design in Psalm 14:1. The foolish says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. There is no one who does good. We have a warning. In Romans 1, verses 18 through 22, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness. Let me ask you a question. If you deny God's creation, are you ungodly? I think you would be, wouldn't you? Why can't we accept what God teaches us? Why do we have to add to it? But we don't. Against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. Look around. Look at your hand. Look at your hand. You have a biological, electromechanical device that just our thoughts, we can make it happen. I don't have to stop talking and say to you, squeeze your hand, move the left finger, right finger. I don't have to do any of that. You talk about a magnificent computer God's given us in our brain. Can that just happen from a pile of primordial ooze? It can't happen. It's ridiculous. How foolish is that? How foolish would it be for us to think that this computer, that we could go out to the dump down here and find one of these and plug it in and it works? Hey, all right. That'd be pretty neat. Well, let's go harvest some computers. It's not going to happen. Why don't we hang around G.W. Pierce down the street down here on 31, closer to Cicero? Let's hang around outside and wait for a Cadillac to develop itself. You know, all the parts are in there. We've knocked millions and billions of years off the evolutionary force. In fact, let's go farther. Let's gather all the parts. Let's say let's go for a 2005 Escalade. Let's gather all the parts from all the junkyards in the neighborhood and around Indianapolis and around Kokomo, and we're going to put them in a stack. We've knocked millions of years off the evolutionary cycle. All the parts are there. Let's get our lawn chairs out, and we'll sit and we'll watch and wait for it to evolve into an Escalade Cadillac. How long are we going to sit there? Eternally. It's never going to happen. How foolish is that to think that this earth that we live on just happened? It is complete, utter foolishness. And yet our children are taught that. It's insane. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. We are without excuse. Everybody is without excuse. Look out the window. Look at your hand. Look at your body that God has given you. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. But they became futile in their speculations. Futile in speculation. Well, 4.7 million years, or billion years, excuse me, put a B there. Billion years, you know, that's how this earth came into being, just by chance, circumstance, and just kind of worked out that way. Futile speculations. And their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, these are scientists. They're over the school boards. Or the colleges. Colleges are that's ridiculous now if you're into anything of God. Professing to be wise, they became fools. So, conclusion. Did God reveal himself to man through the Bible? Or did man just get lucky and guess of all these centuries ago? God spoke through the Bible. You know, that's one thing about Arnold's book. On the front it says, Has God Spoken? And that's the title. You turn the book over and it says, God has spoken. And God has spoken. We are without excuse. We are without excuse. But we can see the foolishness of men in other ways. If you'd look at your Bible, 2 Kings chapter 5, 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 9 through 14. You know, mankind, us, we know better sometimes. Naaman is one of those men. We remember Naaman had leprosy. He was a great warrior. He was a great leader. But he was a leper. We take up in verse 9, it says, "Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house." So he's outside. What had happened before this, the king had sent a message to the king of Israel, "Heal Naaman, he's a great guy, heal him for me." The king had a cow, tore his robe, had a fit. Elisha heard about it, and he says, "Hey, send him out to me, we'll take care of this." I'm paraphrasing quite a bit. So Naaman's standing outside Elisha's house, and Elisha sent a message to him saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? Man of God told him what to do. Go wash 7 times. But look at Naaman's reaction, verse 11. "But Naaman became furious. He erupted, and he went away and said, 'Indeed, I said to myself, he surely will come out to me and stand and call on the name of his God.'" I love this. "And wave his hand over the place." We're going to wave our hands around. We don't see a magic trick taking place here, don't we? "And heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar rivers, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" Why did I come all this way to hear this? He could have sent me a message at home. "So he turned and went away in a rage." He didn't want to accept what God had said, did he? He just wouldn't accept it. "And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, 'My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?'" So he overcame his stubborn heart and his ego. Verse 14, "So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean." It's amazing what happens when we listen to the Word of God. Things work out like they're supposed to. Well, there's something. Another person that had a problem, and that was the Apostle Paul. We know about the Apostle Paul. In Acts chapter 22:16, Paul is recounting what happened to him on the road to Damascus. Acts chapter 22, starting with verse 16. "And now, why are you waiting? Arise and be baptized, and receive the outward sign of an inward thing." That's not what it says. It says, "Wash away your sins, calling on the name of the Lord," is what the Bible says. Paul, we know about the life of Paul. He had been dead set about killing Christians. That's what he was about. He thought he was doing right. He wasn't. But it all comes down to that. When he was blinded on the road to Damascus, he was led to the house in Damascus. Ananias came, and God told Ananias to go. Ananias quickly had to try to advise God. Apparently God had forgotten that Paul was out killing them. But God assured him that, "Hey, this guy's going to do something for me." And that was a miraculous thing when you think about it. Not only him being saved, but the fact that God has provided for us this avenue. This avenue to have our sins taken away, just the same as Paul did. You know, we all have sins, and we all fall short of the glory of God. There's not a one of us here that is perfect. And we're only made clean through the blood of Christ. Are you a Christian? Have you been baptized into Christ? If you haven't, you're not going to be saved in the end. You're not going to have a home in heaven. And your fate is really quite dismal. We have to hear the word. Matthew 7:24. We have to believe Mark 16:15 and 16. It's not faith only, James 2:24. We have to repent, Luke 13:3. We have to confess with our mouth that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, Acts 8:36 and 37, as the Ethiopian eunuch did. And we have to be baptized, Mark 16:16. We can't do it any other way. Oh, it sounds foolish to mankind. It sounds foolish to a lot of our friends who might be denominationalists. Well, all I could do is believe. But that's not true. And don't fall for it. Don't let them pull you away and destroy you, just as these individuals who purport to know about God and His purpose for us, they don't know. We have an opportunity this evening. If you're not a Christian, I would encourage you to become one. If you have sinned in some public way, you need to make that right tonight. Because if you don't and you perish before you have a chance to, your fate is sealed. I would encourage you, if you're not a Christian, you can do that tonight. Come forward and be baptized as we stand and sing.